Hi, everyone. My name is Greg Knight, and I like watching, thinking about, and talking about movies. One of the great things about starting your own podcast is that there are some days where you get to actually talk to the creators of those movies. Our series Under the Stole is where you can find those conversations. I've had the opportunity to interview award-winning directors, up-and-coming documentarians, and even a legit Abraham Lincoln historian. So if you are curious about the creative spirit and want to learn more about how artists are inspired to make their passion projects, check out Under the Stole right here on the Popping Collars feed.
We done with the 90s. Pip and cut. Shoot the ball. Garbage. What I got to give it to your mama. What I got to give it to your papa. What I got to give it to your doctor. You do a little dancing and you drink a little water. What I got to...
Welcome to Popping Collars, the podcast that lives at the intersection of religion and popular culture. My name is Betsy Carmody, and I serve here at the beautiful Episcopal High School here in Northern Virginia. And with me today are my three co-hosts. Let's move around. Who am I going to say hello to? Let's say hello to Liz Easton. Liz, how's it going?
Hi, Betsy. Good. Let's see. My name is Liz Easton. I serve as the canon to the ordinary in the Diocese of Nebraska. And I just broke my foot recently. That's a thing. Oh, thank you. I am fine. Good. But I'm laid up. So that's annoying. But other than that, I'm fine. The body is a miraculous healing machine. So I'm well on my way. I take calcium pills now.
Great. Great.
Welcome
Boniva?
To your 40s.
Is Boniva a thing still?
No,
I don't know whether that's... Oh.
All of my supplements...
Sponsored by Boniva. Hashtag Boniva. Thank you.
Yes, I'm 41 now. All of my supplements taste like gumdrops, which is why it's my favorite moment of the day, is when I wake up. I take a turmeric shot, and then I take... multivitamin tastes like a gumdrop. Turmeric tastes like a gumdrop. Calcium tastes like a gumdrop.
One of my students the other day in class brought up Flintstones vitamins, which I didn't know they still made those. A. B. And he was like, you know what? They don't taste good when you eat a lot of them. And I was like, you are revealing a lot right now about a story
that's
that you shared with us. Don't do that.
Yeah.
It's basically dried Kool-Aid in a pill form.
Mine are gummy consistency, and you would need to keep them away from children because they could overdose. They taste that good.
Wow.
Oh no.
Yeah, but the doctor actually told me that taking calcium would help. I'm actually pretty supplement like suspicious, but she was like, no, calcium is good for your bones, like take it. It's like, fine, I will. So I do.
Liz, so you take a shot of turmeric, like in a glass or at an injection?
No,
how would you
like a?
Are you sprinkling it on your coffee grounds? What's happening?
No, the same way that one would take a tequila shot, it's like turmeric juice with. It's not. I mean, I don't think it's actually effective, but it makes me feel like I'm doing something good for me. So it's like orange, like super concentrated orange juice. With like,
do you buy it at the grocery store?
I do. I buy it at the grocery store. It's ridiculously expensive. But as you guys may or may not know, I am an amateur nutritionist and I learn everything on TikTok. So. So I'm really into anti-inflammatory foods right now, and turmeric is anti-inflammatory. So there.
Wow. That was quite the intro. Greg,
that was a lot.
Do you have any additional?
I have this image of Liz just firing turmeric right into her veins. The way that Ricardo described it as an injection.
An intravenous. Just do that
she's
myself.
Like Liz Taylor with like B12 shots or something.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Tie a little tube around my arm and then.
Yeah. That's great.
Oh my gosh.
Greg, where are you? What are you doing? And what supplements are you taking?
Right. My name is Greg. I'm down here in Palm Beach, Florida, working at the Church of Bethesda by the Sea. Holy cow. I don't know that I take any supplements.
Are you supplement skeptical as well?
I don't know. I drink whey protein after a workout each day. Like,
that counts. That's a supplement.
Protein powder. Is that supplement?
Okay. Okay.
But that's just me. I'm bulking now, mm-hmm. right?
Not record the video here.
Greg is in a bulking
phase.
Looked
at his guns. He just looked at his. So
right now we're bulking. Listeners. We're getting the bicep, little bicep. Little...
Yep. Oh, a flex. Okay.
He's in a bulking phase. That's what they call it. As opposed to a cutting phase.
And that's right.
Oh, thank you.
And then
Liz.
We'll cut later over the summer. Sorry, trim.
All right, seriously. Ricardo.
Yes.
How are you? Where are you? What are your feelings on supplements?
Oh, my God. Betsy, thank you. Wow. Where do I start? Ricardo Avila, rector of St. Luke's Episcopal Church in Los Gatos, California, just southwest of San Jose, which is just south of the actual Bay, San Francisco Bay itself. Yeah, supplements. I do not take supplements. I am also bulking as Greg is, but in a different way. Not muscle, let's just say. But what can I say? Such is the life of a parish priest. I used to take fish oil, but then you weren't supposed to take fish oil. And I think I used to take something vitamin D-ish, and then I just kept forgetting and forgot.
You know, you could buy calcium with vitamin D. Get it all together in one supplement. You know,
I just enjoy how Liz just keeps chirping in with facts and then she's out.
I'm just afraid that like this entire conversation is going to lead to like people having Cologuard, like, you know, popping up on like their Spotify or something.
Greg, the poop in a box.
We've already done that segment. Yeah.
We've done that segment. Keep going, Ricardo.
Sorry. Well, okay. Wait, something you said about supplements. Oh, I was just going to say, I do not take supplements. I am so unhealthy that taking supplements would be like having a Diet Coke with my double cheeseburger. You know, it's like, why bother if I'm not going to exercise and I'm not going to eat right? So why take a supplement? So I figured, what the heck? But I tell you, there's a lot of danger in exercise.
That's true. You could break your foot just going on a walk.
Exactly.
Right.
I walk to the car and I walk to the, you know, refrigerator. So things are going fine. I guess I don't want to say, we don't want to talk about where we are in our.
We can talk about where we are. Greg has already mentioned we are pre-Easter. I mean, listeners, we are recording this in Holy Week.
Oh, yeah.
It is the Wednesday of Holy Week. It's fine. I think it's weird not to talk about that because it is so on our brains. Like we are living Holy Week right now.
Our audience knows that we record these well in advance and.
It is Holy Wednesday and Holy Week, and as a parish priest, I protest. I think all these services are unnecessary. I just think we should just go somewhere and pray for a little while and watch the sunset. I mean, all these things, the things, ten services in 8 days and bulletins and rehearsals and begging people to read the passion reading and the choir singing Farway's Requiem, which is going to be beautiful, but all this stuff. And then other people talk about what they're doing and, oh, we're not doing that. What's wrong with us? And, oh gosh, we're doing better than them. They barely have any bulletins out on their Facebook, blah, blah, blah. It's just, I don't know. I think Jesus might not be too happy with all the falderall. On the other hand, the exhaustion afterwards, there is a sort of euphoria when it's all over. Mm. I just don't know that it's worth it, you know, and what the point is. So not to be negative. Go ahead, Liz.
Well, your mention of the passion reading reminded me of this, that I did a Palm Sunday service last weekend for a little church where there were like 8 people there, 2 of whom were small children. Oh. And I read the passion narrative just all on my own, one voice, which I've never done. I've never been in the position of reading the passion narrative. So I'm like up there reading and I'm like, this is a real long story. You know, it's real long. Mm-hmm. And parts of it, I was like, I don't really remember this part. It was long. And then like,
which version?
Mark. Well, the long one, apparently, because John? 5 pages in to a poor, like a 3-year-old having to listen to me read the passion story. I realize there's like a break in the page. It's like, this is where the shorter version starts. The shorter version?
Oh, that's not nice. Oh,
didn't know about the shorter version. Yeah. So it was real embarrassing. Mm. But we got through it.
Okay, quick roundtable question. Favorite Holy Week service, Greg? As an attendee, not as a person What do you like?
Favorite one that I ever attended was Good Friday Stations of the Cross. Back when I was at the campus ministry, people would do sort of artistic meditations mm-hmm. on each of the stations. It was really awesome. Yeah.
Love, oh, Liz.
Mm-hmm. Maundy Thursday, no foot washing.
For yourself personally?
I will wash everyone's feet. I will wash the feet of the world as long as no one has to wash my feet. But I love the stripping of the altar. That's my favorite Holy Week liturgical mode.
Yes, Ricardo.
You know, I have to confess, I love the Easter Vigil. As much of a pain in the you know what it is, it's just, it's beautiful when you can sit in the pews and let it soak you, especially at an Anglo-Catholic parish, in my opinion. Mm.
What about you, Betsy?
Okay. I'm going to be the Greg in the situation. I've got two. So the first is I love the Easter Vigil at my sending parish to seminary, St. Columba's. There was a while where they got fun and creative about some of the things. And so they did some of the readings. And Ray Suarez from PBS was one of our parishioners. And he did the splitting of the Red Sea as a reporter standing on the edge of the Red Sea.
That's great.
And that's how the reading was done, which was amazing.
Yes.
Amazing. But as the chaplain here at school, we have school on Good Friday. And so we actually read the Passion as our service on Friday. And I've never done that with a group of young people. I've never done that in general, like in a place where the chapel is full of 400 plus people. And to do that with a group of students and adults who volunteered, and then right after to sing, "Were you there when they crucified the Lord?" I mean, that gives me real goosebumps. Mm. And just the entering and exiting in quiet, that's really hard for high school students. So it really gives it a weight. Like, I feel like Jesus actually dies in this community. Mm-hmm. He does stay down until Wednesday, which is when we do Easter chapel, because they're off on Monday. And many of them will go home this weekend, but it's I've never had that before. And it's cool. So anyway, but listener, you haven't shown up for top Holy Week services. You've shown up for this episode, which is our annual pop swap. This is when we get into, sometimes it's blind spots for each other, and we will kind of pick things that maybe we love that we're wondering whether our colleagues know and love. And or it's the thing that we're interested in, we're listening to right now, we're looking for somebody else to talk about it with. So we have given each other assignments that we have fulfilled, and we are now here to talk about said assignments. And Greg, here we go. And Greg is going to draw, and we're going to see who's going to talk about their assignment first.
So kicking us off is Ricardo. Ooh, Ricardo is going to be
right out of the gate
starting us
off. All right.
Well, there goes all my research time while you all were talking. I know I'm not the only one that does that. I see your eyes.
No, I have a full Wikipedia page pulled up in front of me right now to be able to talk about my thing. So,
oh, for crying out loud.
Okay, ready.
Okay.
All right, Ricardo.
Sponsored
what
by
were Wikipedia. You given, Ricardo?
Well, I was paired with Greg Knight. And I love, by the way, that we've all been paired with each other at least once. And so I think this completes the cycle. This is the third time.
It does.
And Greg was, I think Greg was a lot nicer to me than he was to either of you.
Yeah. I'm still getting over that weird strawberry movie last year. Yeah. What did you get, Liz, from Greg?
I got like a 3-hour Bollywood movie about an alien, which was actually very
okay, great.
Good.
What'd you get, Ricardo?
I do want to comment on that bodybuilder Mr. Bean in that Indian movie.
Yeah,
that
was, a hot Mr. Bean.
Oh, man.
Yeah, he was in a bulky. Actually, he was probably in a bulky. Cutting face. Yeah. he was cutting. That was his summer cut.
Oh, Lord. Okay. Well, so Greg pop swapped to me a movie from 2023 called Past Lives. It was one of the 10 Academy Award nominees, and clearly Betsy's a little upset.
I would have loved to have gotten Past Lives. Okay, fine. It's fine, Greg. It's fine.
Liz, have you seen Past Lives?
No, but I've heard great things about it. And wasn't it based on a book?
I don't know. I haven't done the research. Oh,
Liz is deep diving. No. Go, Ricardo, go.
All right, let me just tell you. Okay, so Past Lives came out in 2023, and it's it was written, Greg, you can correct me if I go astray. It's written and directed, I believe, by the same person, and her name is Celine Song. And she is, I think like the main character, I actually don't know this. She was born in Korea, but then moved to Canada. Her family moved to Canada, and then she moved to the US. And so she's kind of got that international thing going, but she's a, you know, she's an immigrant. And the story itself concerns, I loved it, by the way, Greg. Thank you so much.
Yeah. It's not written, it's not based on a book, by the way.
Oh, terrific. Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to guess it's probably based on some of her life. Yeah. So the main character in the movie is named Na Young when she's little in Korea, but she changes her name to Nora when she comes to the U.S. And basically the story is two children in Korea when they're 12 years old are best friends, a boy and a girl, and the girl winds up emigrating to Canada and then the U.S., and the boy stays behind, but they have this connection. And the woman goes on to be a writer, and she marries a white guy, Jewish guy, lives in New York, has a pretty, you know, upcoming, up-and-coming career. And they lose touch for 12 years, but then reconnect on Facebook and then start kind of doing video talks and reconnecting to realize how much they have in common. And I think what happens for her, I don't know how much I can give away. She realizes she needs to live the life she's living now, and living in the past with him in these video calls is kind of, it's tearing her a little bit. So she cuts that off. And then 12 years later, he comes to visit her in New York where she's married. And he's always kind of carried this torch for her. And she's always left a part of her behind in that childhood. Mm. And so past lives, what would have happened if she hadn't emigrated? What would have happened if she hadn't gotten married? What would have happened if they had actually connected even more in that first set of 12 years? I mean, there's just all these possibilities. And it's clear, at least to me, that there's a real magnetism and a romance and a draw with the man from Korea. That in a way, she's got this pleasant marriage to this white guy and they get along and this and that. But it just doesn't feel as passionate. And maybe that's because they've been married for a while and who knows. And it's the one she has, not the one she could have had. But it's just a beautiful movie. And it's a meditation, I think, on so many things. On, you know, the choices we make in life, the circumstances that define us, the things we may settle for, or the things we may strive for and unwittingly leave behind some things of value because of the striving. You know, so there's all this stuff going on. And I think for Nora, the big thing was, there's a scene at the near the end, and I don't want to give it away, so I won't. But they're basically finally saying there's this concept, I guess, in Korea called In-Yun. And it's like that you live these past lives, and the person that you're really with now is someone you've had all these past lives with. You slowly and gradually became closer to them until they became the person, your soulmate, right?
There's a word in Korean. In-yun. It means providence or fate. But it's specifically about relationships between people. I think it comes from Buddhism and reincarnation. It's an in-yun. If two strangers even walk by each other in the street and their clothes accidentally brush, because it means there must have been something between them in their past lives. If two people get married, they say it's because there have been 8,000 layers of in-yun over 8,000 lifetimes.
Do you believe in that?
Believe what?
That you and I knew each other in another life.
Because we're sitting here at the same table, in the same city, at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wouldn't that make this Inyan?
That's just something Koreans say to seduce someone.
I found it so poignant, and it made me think about my marriage. It made me think about immigration. There's a lot about like what kids leave behind, you know, when they emigrate or are too little to kind of make the decision for themselves. But at the end of the movie, they're having this conversation and the husband's just sitting there in the bar and he says something like, you know, the girl I fell in love with was you. But the thing is, what I fell in love with about you is that you were someone who wasn't going to settle for staying here. You know, you were ambitious. You wanted more out of the world. And that's what I would love about you. Mm-hmm. But the thing I love about you is the thing that's going to take you away from me, basically, if that makes sense. And it was just poignant because you could tell he's heartbroken, I think. But we make the decisions in our lives that, that create the narrative that we are living through, and all those exit ramps that we chose to pass by, or you know, starting points we chose to leave, becomes life. It makes me think of leaving Wisconsin, leaving the Midwest. I've had so many kind of iterations of my life. And now I sometimes envy all those high school friends that are still together. You know, they've known each other for, 40 years now, which I think for me would be stifling. I could not do that. I could not still live in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. But there are ways in which I see their photos on Facebook and I think, God, well, what is my thing that I have that I can say, well, I'm glad I have this because you all have that. Because they have these tight connections. They still drink the beer and they wear the Wisconsin sweatshirts and all of that. It's not for me. But I think I probably, there was a transaction there, you know? So to get what I have now, I had to leave that behind. But you can look back and have some regret, I think. And doesn't mean the choice you made was wrong. It just means that no choice is, you know, clean.
Greg, why did you pick this for Ricardo?
You know, Ricardo loves classic movies. What was it? The first thing he gave you, Betsy, I think was Casablanca.
I watched Casablanca for the first time, everybody. Deeply embarrassing, but I did it.
There are elements of this movie that are echoes of Casablanca. So, like, it is Rick, Elsa, and Laszlo, right? Like, it's that sort of scenario that's kind of playing out. And, like, you know, who would Elsa be if she went with Rick rather than stayed with her husband? And who is he, you know, this sort of, you know, French immigrant trying to get out of Nazi Germany? There's a lot of sort of stuff that's going on in that sort of triad dynamic that is also sort of echoed, I think, in this movie. And so one of the reasons that I picked this was because I was thinking back to that sort of Casablanca element that's in this movie. And I was thinking, you know, it's funny because we talk about like classic movies being made back in the 40s and 50s and stuff like that. But there are classic movies that are being made now, right? It's just about sort of finding them in the midst of like all of the other stuff. And Celine Song, what she did here, this is her first feature film and it's gorgeous. Like it's like this beautiful meditation on human relationships and immigration and all of that stuff. And so that's one of the things. But mainly it's just this idea of Inyan that Ricardo talked about before, this idea that you make an imprint on someone in a previous life and that imprint carries forward. And then depending on how you interact in that life, that imprint again continues forward. And it's that sense that we have sometimes where we meet somebody who's a total stranger, and yet we have some kind of intimate feeling or feeling of connection with them, and we don't know why. And that's what this movie sort of puts its finger on, is where does that feeling kind of come from? And is it an imprint from something that we've lived before? Coming into this life and echoing through this life. And I just thought it was really beautiful. And so I was curious about what Ricardo would think of it.
I also would really love for this movie to like replace culturally maybe loved, but maybe not the greatest movie, Sliding Doors with Gwyneth Paltrow. Can we have Past Lives be the new like catchphrase for that, you know, if my life went another way, you know, if I caught the train or not, like that sort of idea. I've loved her past lives to, or at least, you know, and even what's the Korean word again?
In-yun.
If In-yun could be that word, as opposed to sliding doors and whatever short bob haircut Gwyneth Paltrow has, if that could be our thing, let's do that. It reminds me of when in theology class, when Marian had us read about Han in Korean, that feeling of that word of discontent and unsettledness, and how when you're able to step into another culture and experience these words that don't translate well into English and Western culture, that there's so much to learn inside that. You know, I had a student tonight gave a beautiful chapel talk about his grandfather, which, you know, you're always told, don't write like college essays. Don't write about the dead relative who's super influential, right? And I do not think that the student did that, but he wanted to write about it for his chapel talk because being, you know, having an American father and a Swedish mother, he, you know, they spend a lot of time in Sweden, spend a lot of time with her family in the summer times. And just the way his grandfather influenced him. And when he passed away, the feeling of calmness, and I'm not going to try to quote the Swedish word, that means calmness, that his grandfather holds, has led to this whole dedication to simplicity that this 18-year-old boy has really felt in his own life. And that when you allow the vocabulary of that to come in, not in a cool, interesting way, hey, bring that in so I can borrow it and steal it, but in this way that is that Westerners do, white Westerners do all the time, but in that way of like, oh my gosh, that is so interesting. And like, let me talk about that. And that feeling of imprinting, that fingerprinting, I find I preach about that feeling a lot. We have bricks around our campus that you can see the fingerprints of the brick makers in the bricks. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how old those bricks are. I know that person is probably no longer living. But there's this brick and imprint, and then their names are imprinted on bricks. And I mean, there's all sorts of things, right? That, you know, we are imprinted and fingerprinted, you know, things imprint on us. And I love this whole idea. It preaches on and on. All right, Greg, now you get a chance to either return this favor or roast Ricardo for whatever he gave you. Greg, what did you receive from Ricardo?
I think we can get through this pretty quickly. Although that's not to say that I did not like what Ricardo gave me. I actually loved what Ricardo gave me. But I, you know, there's this pattern that emerges, that starts to emerge with the four of us and what it is that we love. I think, you know, for me, it's always, I sort of fall back on movies. And so I was fully expecting that Ricardo was going to give me some kind of music something. And he did. And the music thing that he gave me was he asked me to watch a documentary and then listen to an album. And the documentary was Big Star, Nothing Can Hurt Me. And the album that I listened to was the band Big Star and their album Number One. Big Star Number One. So here's the thing. So I watched the documentary first because I didn't really know a ton about Big Star as a band before getting this assignment. And I'm glad I watched the documentary first because it was this really neat story about this band from Memphis, Tennessee. And the way that it opens up is that all these sort of music magazine writers are having a convention in Memphis in the 70s. So think like Lester Bangs and Cream Magazine and, you know, like Punk Magazine and all of these like big like music fanzines are all getting together for this convention in Memphis. And they all go, all these writers, all these critics go out to the show together. And the show that they go to is a Big Star concert. And they all fall in love with this little band who's sort of like, you know, toiling away in obscurity down here in Memphis, and no one's ever heard of them and all of this stuff. And so it sort of goes into the story of Big Star and how they formed and what led them to be sort of this cult sort of band, this band that had a lot of influence on people, but never really had any big hits. So Big Star is a four-member band. I think the two main leads, though, are Alex Chilton, who was one of the vocalists for the band and played guitar. Alex had a bit of a past before he joined Big Star. He was lead singer of a band called the Box Tops, and they had a big hit with a song called The Letter. You know, take a ticket for an airplane, right? And got, that's the one, right? That my baby yeah. just wrote me a letter. Yeah. So they had a big hit with that song. And then, but then Alex left that band and was sort of maneuvering around and found his way to this band, Big Star. The other, vocalist in the band and songwriter and big element, I would say, of the band is a man named Chris Bell. And what the two of them have together is sort of, you know, it's the kind of dynamic that I love in bands, which is this way that these two people have very different ideas of melody and rock and roll and what it can be. But because they come together, they form something better than what they would create individually. So think John Lennon and Paul McCartney, right? It's very much like that. It's very much like you have like a rock guy and you have like a music melody beauty guy, and you bring them together and they add to each other rather than sort of take away from each other. So after I watched the documentary, I went back and I listened to number one, and I had this sort of knowledge of what an Alex song kind of sounded like and what a Chris song sort of sounded like as I was listening to the album. And they're really pretty. The one song that I think everyone would probably know from Big Star number one is a song called In the Street, which was the theme song for that 70s show. Mm-hmm. It was the thing that would play at the beginning of that 70s show, which I think for that 70s show, it was covered by Cheap Trick. Like Cheap Trick was, they were big Star fans. And so they would play In the Street as like a cover. But also, like, REM were big Star fans, and the Replacements were big Star fans. And so all of these bands that have like this, you know, songwriting up front, melody, beauty up front, but also rock and roll at their core, all sort of cite Big Star as one of the big influences on who they were. And so I'm listening to number one record, and they have just great sort of like, I don't know, like sort of echoes of Beatles stuff, but also echoes of Rolling Stones stuff. When you listen to their music, it sounds a lot like the Byrds. It's a lot of like neat harmonies going on and stuff like that.
Won't you let me walk you home from school? Won't you let me meet you at the maybe Friday I can get tickets for the dance. Now take you. Ooh. Won't you tell?
They have a song called 13 that I just love. It's just so, it feels so adolescent. It feels so like the romanticized way that you see the world when you're growing up. It's gorgeous. But then they also have a song called the India Song, you know, which has like sort of that late Beatles kind of sitar groove to it a little bit and stuff. And so you can sort of feel some of those influences. So anyway, all that is to say that I was glad to sort of live in the world of Big Star for a little bit. One of the things that I love about Ricardo and his taste in music is that he always sort of finds things that aren't mainstream. They're sort of off the beaten path. They're things that are discovered. And I feel like through this process, I discovered Big Star a little bit, even though, you know, they're sort of influential. And it was just, it felt like this real sort of neat detour into a world of music that I had never really experienced before. And so So I was glad to sort of be immersed in that sort of 70s discovered music. So Big Star, album number one. Take a listen to it. Pull it up in your Spotify. It's a really groovy way to start your morning commute, I would say.
Groovy way. This is totally, I love a good documentary all day long. Like I'm like on my phone, I like muted the podcast so I could watch the trailer. There are so many people in this trailer influenced by this band. Like R.E.M. is one of my like four white guys in a band. I mean, U2's number one. R.E.M. is number two. If we're going to go there, and I'll own all the privilege there. But yeah, like that is, it's a lot of people who I, foundational artists that I grew up listening to, who are talking very intricately about this band. Mm-hmm. This is not a passing interest in this band. This is a real foundational interest in this band.
Matthew Sweet.
And the loss of those... Go.
Matthew Sweet is one of those people.
Oh.
Betsy has a famous Matthew Sweet picture.
I do. I took a great picture of him with this not smoking sign backstage at Northwestern. And he's like lighting up. I'm like, I'm the best photojournalist ever. Why am I not the next Annie Leibovitz? Where are you, fame? Anyway, but that... Looking at this, and I mean, both of those creatives that you mentioned, the two who are no longer living, I mean, such interest, tragic deaths, decades apart from each other, right? Car accident. And then like later in life, you know, a musician with no health insurance, right? Like that is amazing. Like I'm also up in Wikipedia, like I'm all in it. Like, okay, done. Ricardo, you have now solidified what I'm watching next. Thank you so much.
Yeah, me too. I'm influenced.
Yes. Oh, I'm influenced. God. Ricardo, why did you pick this?
Well, you know, it's Greg sort of put his finger on it. When I discovered Big Star, I felt so special. I thought, I found this thing nobody knows about except like these famous people I think are awesome. And I would say, oh, Big Star. And they say, well, what's that? Well, what's that? And I think, and I wanted to share that. That documentary, I think it actually bogs down a little bit in the like middle, but that it's so exciting. You get the hype of it when all these famous people you respect are saying these guys were foundational for me. And so you got to listen to it. And then when you listen to it, it's weird because it's old, but it sounds fresh to me anyway. And so you think, wow, this has been around all the time in these other, in this other music and in other ways, but I never heard this kind of first thing. And that song 13 is so gorgeous. It's just about so being pretty. 13 years old and knowing everything and, you know, but it's just, it's poignant.
So are you saying Taylor Swift ripped them off with songs about ages? Is this what you're saying? Maybe a little bit.
You know, I don't like all their songs, but the more you listen to them, the more you like them. And they had kind of three albums that I think of as their three. And all of them have some really terrific songs. So I picked it because I wanted Greg to feel what I felt, that excitement of like discovering something.
Big Star. Big Star. Awesome. I think they were named after a grocery store, right? That's what they
called it. I think so.
Even though it is, if Ricardo is right, it is all wildly aspirational. Like, you know, to have them like kind of be then this undiscovered gem that people then find. That's very cool.
Okay. Betsy.
All right, Rhonda, Liz and I. No, I feel like Liz should go first.
Oh,
because
okay.
Liz gave me something that has a little more gravitas. Oh, to it. I think that has a little more. Mine feels a little more fun and light and bubbly. I don't know. Fun. I mean, unless we want to end on fun, light and bubbly, whatever.
No, I can go. And I did. I gave you one basically that I just wanted to talk about. So yeah, I wanted to talk with someone about. So yeah, so I'll do the one that you.
Okay, good.
So we were earlier, I think, before we were recording, talking about procrastination more generally. We've had months to do this assignment. Months. And somehow I thought I could do this after work today. I do work a full-time job and it is Holy Week, but I that was my plan. And it's not like I'm that busy. You know, I have a broken foot. I've been rewatching This Is Us every night. I haven't been that busy. So anyway, Betsy gave me the assignment to listen to 3 podcast episodes and then watch a YouTube video. Well, unbeknownst to me, the podcast episodes were each like an hour and 45 minutes long. So
they were not all an hour and 45 minutes long.
They were over an hour.
They were over an hour. And listeners, this gives you a little bit of a glimpse into how much podcasting I listen to, which is a lot. And I thought Liz is driving places in Nebraska, maybe.
A fair assumption on your part with the miles that I drive. And had I done my homework in the last 2 months, it would have been great companionship. So I made an executive decision and I listened to one episode of the podcast and I watched the video that you sent me. So
did you, which episode did you listen to?
Paul Hollywood.
Okay, we're good.
So anyway, the podcast that Betsy gave me to listen to is called Off Menu with Ed Gamble and James. Is it Acaster? Mm-hmm.
James Acaster.
And they are two British comedians. And it's one of those podcasts where maybe some people feel this way about our podcast. It's like listening to friends talking, which is just one of my favorite things. So that was very comforting and kind of wholesome feeling that it was really fun. And these guys are very funny. And the concept of the podcast is that they pretend that they are in a magical restaurant and every one of their guests who are celebrities of different kinds get to pick their favorite starter, main course, side dish, dessert, and drink. So they sort of create their dream meal. And then with each course, they just sort of talk about it. And the episode that I listened to is with Paul Hollywood, because one of these comedians was a guest on like a celebrity edition of Bake Off. So that was sort of like behind the scenes British Bake Off, which was fun. I won't go into it too much because obviously I didn't listen to the three episodes, but now I will definitely listen to more. You know, when I do like retreats and stuff and do like a icebreaker, one of my favorite icebreakers is tell the story about the best meal you've ever had. And inevitably you get these really profound stories because that's usually not about food at all. It's about a person or a place that meant a lot to you or a trip or, you know, having crackers and cheese at the bedside of my dying relative or, you know, just some, it can be anything that has a, is attached to a moment and a memory and meaning in a person's life. It's like a great way in. And this reminded me of that. Like it felt very, it, you know, there were echoes of church for me in terms of like building community. And it was just very sweet and a great idea for a conversation and a podcast. And I can picture just like doing that with friends or doing it with a church group, going through that cycle of like, okay, what would your favorite starter be? And it is a conversation like, oh, yeah, that reminds me of this restaurant I went to as a little kid or this place that we visited or I heard a funny story about this. It was very charming. And Paul Hollywood, who I only know from Bake Off, he has a big personality. He's kind of gruff, but also there's a softness there. Hearing a more like tender side of him, more like human connecting side was very sweet. And then Betsy sent me a YouTube clip, and this might be what you want to use for audio, Greg, because it is really funny, of James Acaster, who is the one who's the guest on Bake Off, telling the story of his, like, epic fail as a contestant on Bake Off.
Main reason I said yes to it in the first place, because all my comedy friends who had done it in the past told me the technical was really easy. They were all like, oh, honestly, James, the whole point of that technical is I want to encourage people at home who haven't baked before to bake and raise money for Stand Up To Cancer. So I'm going to show them how easy it is to bake from scratch. So it's a really detailed recipe, people on standby to help you out if needs be, and stuff like fairy cakes or gingerbread biscuits. Easy stuff, nothing complicated, like, oh, I don't know, off the top of my head, six identical cream horns. They might make you do that. That'd be beyond unreasonable if they made you make six identical things you've never seen with your eyes before. You have no concept of. Just imagine a thing out of nowhere, then conjure it into existence with skills you do not possess. Then replicate that five more times to competition standard, please. Yes, we're filming it. Why wouldn't we be filming it?
it's really funny, and it's just this story of like a young man's mental breakdown on television. And then in the podcast, he sort of rehearses what happened with Paul Hollywood. It's like rehearsing a trauma, right? And it's very, very funny. So great podcast, Off Menu. Totally recommend it. It was very sweet and a great recommendation. I wish I had not procrastinated and I would have listened to more episodes, but I will listen to more episodes.
No, it's okay. It's okay. The other episodes I recommend to Liz were Florence Pugh, who's an actress, right? A Little Women and other things, Midsummer. Oppenheimer. She, I think I wonder if I remember correctly, like her family is restaurant connected. Like they had a restaurant. And so there's a lot of conversation about kind of having a family restaurant. Cause you're able to pick a meal that you know, that someone who is now long dead, you can pick an entree that was made by somebody who was no longer living. You know, they go down to even
super
like
specific.
Yeah. Are you picking still or sparkling water? At the beginning of this, which evidently feels very heated because some people think you're trying to be super fancy if you pick sparkling, you know, but are you like, you know, but like Nadia, who's like a longtime winner, she was a winner of Bake Off. Like she loves room temperature water. Like that's what she likes. I know. And we all cringe. I'm watching Liz's face. It's cringing. But then she's like, that's what I love. I love it. I love room temperature water. The one is like, room temperature flat water. That's what I'm going to pick. People aren't going to like it, but that's what I like. And then the last episode is Paul Rudd, the actor. And there's a rumor out there that Paul Rudd is a very picky eater and that he will not eat sauces of any kind. And this is an episode
couldn't live without
really tries
sauces.
To dispel that rumor around his sauce consumption. But it is, I mean, food is, I agree with Liz. It's such a window.
I have some thoughts, but Betsy, just so that we stay on, what is it, our format here, why did you pick this for Liz?
It was a podcast that a friend had recommended to me, and I had kind of loaded into my like preferences in the podcast app that I use, but I hadn't listened to it. And so I was looking at a long drive from Western North Carolina back to DC by myself. And so I loaded in. I was like, there are a lot of British celebrities, and I hate to say, you know, who I don't know. Interview. And so I was kind of like, oh, I don't know. So I was looking through for and like loading in before I left Wi-Fi, like the episode, like listen later, like downloading the ones I knew of people who were names I recognized. And so I was laughing out loud to the Paul Hollywood episode at the gas station, like filling up before I'm heading out of town. As the storytelling went, and I love storytelling. I think we all love storytelling and the jobs that we're in, that food, I love food. I love storytelling and food. And when you put those things together, like one of my, the way I teach, when we move into talking about sacred actions, the first discussion I ask my students is, tell me a memory about food that you have. And so they'll tell me about, you know, a dish that's always served at Thanksgiving or dumplings that are always made at Lunar New Year or, you know, and like those sorts of things. Like I always tell the story of when my mother-in-law, Dora, taught us how to make tamales at seminary and had us all like making them in the apartment and everything. Like memories and food, like why do we hold on to them? Why do we ritualize food? And then why are human beings drawn to that activity? And then I'll move into talking about dietary laws, Passover, communion, and anamnesis, right? This very fancy word that's about bringing the power of an event from the past, a ritual, something that happens in the past, bring the power of that event into the present. So the Exodus, the power of freedom at the hand of God into now. Communion, the power of gathering with friends, unity, and sacrifice into now. And so I think those stories, those rituals, and then when you add in a food layer, working with young people, Greg, you know, food is always welcome and powerful. So the podcast, and I'm sure that the hosts would be like, what are you talking about? But that has, it hit a chord. And I've really enjoyed it. One of my colleagues, Chris, recommended it to me. So shout out to Chris. And so I've loved it since then and have enjoyed kind of exploring their back catalog of episodes.
I would say, Liz, I'm totally going to steal that food idea for.
Yeah. Well, I stole it from my bishop. So,
That's a great one. And then two, like anything involving food and interviews, I always just find hilarious. So, so like Hot Ones on YouTube, right?
Yes.
It's just, it's like, so that's where you eat progressively hotter chicken wings, you know, and a guy's asking you questions as you're like, as your mouth is on fire. And what's always hilarious about that is when celebrities are like looking over at their publicist, like, what the hell have you gotten me into? Like,
you know, you got me into.
Like, and all of their people are just kind of laughing at them, you know, and stuff. But it also makes me think of like, you know, all those trip to movies, like the trip to Greece or the trip to Spain or the trip to Italy with Steve Coogan and stuff, you know, where they have like these hilarious like conversations.
Oh, Coogan's episode is great. Coogan's episode is really good. He's on here.
Where they have these hilarious conversations, but then there's like this glorious food that they're sort of eating at the same time. And it's just those movies are just fabulous. Yeah. So anything involving like discussion and food, I love those things. Yeah.
So Liz gave me
an easy one.
An easy that I could have done just today, everyone. Yes. I could have just done it this afternoon.
You could have done it during the recording of
everything
this podcast.
I have going on. So Liz assigned me watching the performance of Tracy Chapman and Luke Combs, the new Fast Car. At the Grammys this year.
You got a fast car. I wanted to get to anywhere. Maybe we make a deal. Maybe together we can get somewhere. Any place is better. Starting from zero, got nothing to lose. Maybe we'll make something. Be myself, I got nothing to prove. You got a fast car, and I got a plan. Get inside of here, been working at the convenience store. Managed to save just a little bit of money. Won't have to drive too far. Cross the border and into the city, and you and I can both get jobs. Finally see what it means to be living.
And this is a song that, of course, Tracy Chapman released umpteen years ago, 1989. When did that album? 89. And we'll get to why I am so good at knowing that just off the top of my head in a second. And then Luke Combs released this year a cover of that song, where he essentially just flat covered the song. No change, no pronoun change, nothing. To cover the song. And they duetted it. And Tracy Chapman has not performed on a public national broadcast in decades. So this performance was a really big deal. There was a lot of rumor around it happening prior to the broadcast. And then they pulled it off, and it was beautiful. Just to have it really, the spotlight was really on Tracy. It starts with her guitar. She's the lead voice. And this admiration that's really on Luke Combs' face during the performance of this song. Watching her, the deference to her. There's a lot of energy passing between them on the stage. Because they're both beautiful singers, and they do a lovely job doing this song together. And then Liz said, I was welcome to go down any reflective, column-worthy wormhole I wanted to.
Because there was a lot of commentary.
There was a lot of meaning-making happening about this performance, post-performance. Now, background on both of these artists for me. Tracy Chapman was one of the first CDs I purchased. I purchased Tracy Chapman, her debut album, and The Dead Milkmen. But those are my two albums.
Wow,
just kind of two very different vibes for my very giant CD player in my bedroom. And I did go down a little bit of a wormhole of where's Tracy Chapman been? What's she been doing? And like, you know, her like lobbying for things in her community and involved in her in schools and different things like that. But as a woman who hasn't necessarily been out, but, you know, we know that she's gay, but we don't. So there's a lot of things about Tracy, but just this soulful, folkish performer, singer-songwriter. And Luke Combs came to my attention when the students had picked a song of his they really liked, and they maybe wanted to sing for their senior chapel song. But then there was a video that Luke Combs had made that had a lot of Confederate flags on it. And so there were a number of students who were like, I do not feel comfortable singing anything by Luke Combs because of the Confederate. So Luke Combs was not on my radar. And this was several years ago until that happened. And so I was like, oh. And to then have them together in this moment, highly charged to write a lot of things about this pair up. Mm-hmm. And also loading a lot on top of two musicians who I think really admire. We're up for working together in my room. I don't think Tracy Chapman would have been on that stage if Luke Combs had not done the work that he needed to do.
Right. She had no reason to be.
No, yeah. She has no reason to be. And I don't think she would have been there if all that other stuff hadn't been, because Luke Combs did a ton of work around that. He did work around his past and some of that imagery and kind of the person, where he came from and kind of where that imagery came from for him and now where he is now, which is different. So people were up for really placing a ton of hope on top of this music performance. The black and white and male and female and gay and straight and rural or like whatever you want to put on top of it. This was, you know, the coming together of America, right? You could write that banner on top of this. But that in the end, I don't think any of the writers were that naive. Mm-hmm. Because we have gone so far since 2016 and before into areas of divisiveness to know that one Grammy performance is going to be the healing salve on the divisions in this country. I also glimpsed the glimmer of hope in the performance. I saw it, I felt it, and the pop culture part of me that knows the power of music felt it, and I wanted it, but it's not enough to do what it wanted to do, but can I allow it to be what it is and not make it have to be more? And that's where I ended up landing in Liz's assignment. What about you, Liz? Yay. You wanted to talk about it. What do you think?
I did. And I love everything that you said. That performance and also Luke Combs's recording of this song sort of became my Roman Empire for a couple of months.
Yeah.
I got really into it for a few reasons. But the first, so like I listen to country radio a lot while I'm driving around. And the first time that I heard the Luke Combs cover, I was stunned. I was like, oh my God. It's a fine cover, but the remarkable thing is that it is a straight cover. It's word for word, including, like you said, the pronouns. So he says, I worked in the market as a checkout girl. He does a perfectly straight cover. And I knew that that was significant, not culturally, but artistically and economically, because Fast Car is a perfect song, right? I mean, everybody loves Fast Car. It is a perfect song. And people have tried to cover it, obviously, since it was released in 1989. They've tried to sample it. And Tracy Chapman would not allow them to, because she didn't need to. There was no reason that she needed to do that. And what I've heard is that she didn't want people to sample it because she wanted the integrity of the song to stay the same. So here comes this like white country guy. And he's like, this is like a core childhood memory of mine. This is how I learned how to play the guitar. It's my favorite song. My dad burned the cassette tape through in his old pickup truck. I want to record this song. And for whatever reason, we don't know why, she let him. Now it ended up being, it charted number one again. So obviously it was a great move for her financially, if that was of interest to her, which like, why wouldn't it be? It introduced her to a whole new audience. It is quietly subversive in country music. So that was all really interesting to me. And then it was interesting to see, you know, like we live in the era of like hot takes. And I kept seeing these like TikToks of young, like Gen Z people commenting on, there were like two arguments. One was like, of course, it takes a white man to like bring about like listenership for this black woman's song. He's making money on this black woman's song. And they had to be corrected by people saying, oh, no, no, no. Like this song was a massive hit. Nobody is, I'm sure Tracy Chapman, I'm sure did not get her due as it could have been. I'm sure that she faced adversity in music, but she was also a highly celebrated artist. Then you also heard the different argument of like, this is how a white person gives credit to a black person. And then people will be like, no, no, no. Like she knows what she's doing. Like, don't infantilize her. This was a move on her part that was smart. Anyway, it was just really interesting to see all of this, to see a whole new generation trying to force this conversation that, like you said, Betsy, was all of those things and was also none of those things. This is a song about poverty. It's a song about not escaping poverty. And to see like Jelly Roll, like just crying and singing along. And then to, it's also a song by a lesbian. And then to see Brandi Carlile hugging her partner and crying and singing along.
Wife, like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. And then Taylor Swift just like being Taylor Swift. Like it just shows the impact sort of universally of this. And it's folk music, but it's also pop music, you know? And I'll stop talking. I could talk about this forever.
I have a few things to say.
Yeah.
It's a perfect song. I mean, it's sort of
great song.
It's like an eternal song, I think. It's one of those, it's a very specific narrative that, I mean, as you were saying, all those audience members, whatever their background, whatever their life now, it just gets so core. I don't know why. I mean, I always took it very specifically. I mean, I had a old man with a problem who hit the bottle. Mm-hmm. I didn't, you know, have to take care of him, but that idea of wanting to escape the life you've been given because you have this encounter with someone in a car and you feel possibility. You know, that's what that refrain is. I remember when we were driving, it felt like I was drunk. The city lights spread out before us and I had a feeling I could be someone.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, so core. And she doesn't make it in the song, right? I mean, she's like, take your fast car and keep on driving because it's not going to work for me. Mm-hmm. That stuff, I mean, that's intense. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what I'm trying to say. Just to say it's a perfect song. I don't know. I'm assuming it's from her life or something because it doesn't seem like that's something you make up.
I don't know that it is. Like I think she went to like Yale or like Dartmouth or something. Like I'm not sure. That doesn't mean that that's not part of her life. But
well, I don't know. Anyway, it's a perfect song. I know that she used to busk in Harvard Square because that was a big thing.
Yeah, she was like
that was kind of where she got discovered. She also lived in San Francisco.
She still does.
And she still does. And I think I kind of know where she lives. I'm not going to tell the story online. I think I told you, Greg.
You told me, yeah, I think.
I had a Tracy Chapman encounter, actually. Yeah. But
Chapman encounter?
I did. But I want to say about the song. So I saw that performance. I didn't know who Luke Combs was. And I only went to see it because I heard all this hype about how amazing it was and how amazing it was. And for me, not to detract from anyone else's experience, it had the Star Wars effect, where I didn't see Star Wars for months and months. And everyone said, this is the most amazing movie ever. And I go to see it and it was good. But, like I had so much hype and I thought, okay, well, it's a cover of the song. She looked radiant. I mean,
she looked amazing.
Smile, her eyes, her skin, hair, her jeans. She was like an angel, frankly. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember him actually very well, but and I don't know him. But I heard his cover of it later and I thought, well, it's a cover. Why is it so great? And so I guess I didn't, the song already is perfect. Maybe you were already saying this and I don't know, I guess you can add meaning onto it. Oh, this is a white guy who uses Confederate flags in his video. So this is a healing moment. Well, maybe he just actually loves music and recognizes something that touches him. Mm-hmm. And when you start giving all these meanings and political things, and I feel like you sort of risk ruining it. And so maybe that performance, what was good about it was, it was just the two of them sharing a song they both have had in their lives mm-hmm. deeply. And I think if there's any magic in the performance, that maybe it's from that. It's exactly. Not from what it means. It's Trace Hay. Look at the picture of her with Luke Combs. And she has gray hair. I just forgotten about the performance. Oh, mm-hmm.
Yeah, she looked fantastic. Thank you, Betsy, for humoring me. All I wanted to do is talk about this.
No,
if I had
so
assigned
good.
It to you a week later, I might have assigned the I'm Just Ken performance from the Oscars, which I've also become a little bit obsessed with.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, so good.
Have you watched that?
Choreography.
Recording? Oh,
Real Mixins. Okay, another podcast.
Don't hype it up. Don't hype it up.
I don't want to hype it up.
Thanks, Ricardo. It sucks.
It's good. It's good. So, listen, this is what I love about this annual episode, which now we're going to, you know, it's us feeling... It's us sharing, and I think it's seeing the light up in other people about the thing that we're sharing. And that's in the end why I think all of us have been drawn to popular culture. It's the sharing, it's the water cooler quality of these things. And in our culture that has moved into streaming and this and on demand, it's hard to kind of always have these moments. And so this kind of allows us to create that for each other. Of giving each other something and allowing us then to talk about it. So I always love this. This is one of my favorites that we do during the year. So thank you all so much for diving into your homework and your assignments. You all get A pluses over here from me. I'm very proud of you. So friends, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Poppin' Collars. I would highly recommend, if you've got friends who love popular culture like you do, why not do this with your friends? Like, this would be a great idea to kind of give each other an assignment and then decide to meet up at like your local watering hole or go out to dinner together or whatever it is that you want to do and talk about the things that you gave each other, because this is endlessly fun. And I think all of us are enthusiastically nodding. So thank you so much for joining us for Poppin' Collars. You know, you can find us wherever you stream all your favorite podcasts. You know, you can go on to poppincollarspodcast.com and get some merchy merch and all that good stuff if you need to fill your Easter baskets or your April gift baskets for, I don't know what's happening.
Graduation
gifts. Passover gifts. Like, I don't know what you're into. What's happening for
Arbor
you?
Day? When is Arbor Day?
Arbor Day.
Arbor Day is every day.
Ramadan's coming. Like, I don't know. You may need to give some gifts. Who knows? So please, please, please. We love that you love this podcast, and we love that you listen, and we love doing it. So thank you for all of that. And my friends, keep those collars popped.
Pop, pop.
Good job, Betsy. Wow, what an outro.
Efficient.
Great job.
Ooh, Betsy. Ricardo, you have to watch I'm Just Ken at the Oscars.
Can I tell you my Tracy Chapman story?
Yeah.
It's very short, but it's a true story, but it doesn't sound true. So I was walking in the Mission. She lives somewhere around Liberty and Guerrero, like between 20th and 21st. I don't know. I've lived there 18 years. I had a friend who lived right there. She said, Tracy Chapman lives around the corner. So I don't know when this was, sometime in the 90s, and I'm walking along and I'm crossing Liberty Street on Guerrero, and this car stops and it starts going. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm in the crosswalk and I look, and it's Tracy Chapman. She almost hit me with her car. And of course, I didn't think of this till later, but I should have said, you got a fast car. You need to slow down.
I'm just kidding. Just care where I see love, she sees a friend.